trusted voice of truth and light.
God gave me a gift. I shovel well. I shovel very well.
And a rally point for those who've accepted the reality that they are not sheep.
We've got a blind date with destiny.
And it looks like she's ordered the lobster.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Well, hello there and welcome to the show. Look, you like me may be somebody who would just like to live a quiet, unassuming life, enjoy the good things that this world has to offer, and, all you ask in return is that the world leave you alone. Well, you can probably tell that's not going to be the case. The world is not going to leave us alone. There are forces out there every day, not only trying to exert domination and control over us, but I think the worst part of it is they seek to deceive at every level possible. Psychologically, subconsciously, it's all about trying to convince us, not so much to just, snap to when they say, you jump and, you ask me how high when I tell you to jump. It's more a matter of trying to convince us to give up our own voluntary volition over ourselves and to allow ourselves to be controlled. Yeah, I'm against that kind of thing. And the remedy that I believe is most feasible is for us common average people, you and me, to think for ourselves, think clearly, think independently. I think this is especially important in times of crisis. And if you look around you, you don't have to use a whole lot of imagination to see that we have layers upon layers of crises developing and being laid upon us. So we've got our work cut out for us. So my goal here is, it's multi-pronged. I want to cover a couple of different things. Number one, I want you to understand you're not alone. If you're a person who puts priority on truth, you are the person I'm speaking to. And you're not insane and you're not out of step with you may be out of step with society, but that's actually kind of a good thing. But I want you to be more certain of who you are and what you stand for than simply, hey, you need to hate this or you need to hate them or you need to be angry about this or fearful about that. That's what the entire manipulation apparatus is trying to do. I'm asking you, question the narrative. Know who you are, know what you stand for. Make the difference you were born to make. And it's going to be different for every single one of us. I've got great sponsors who make this show possible. You'll notice a special segment of my show notes at thebrianhydeshow.com is dedicated to recognizing those sponsors like Dixie Chiropractic and HSL Ammo, Sewing and Quilting Center, Monticello College, also Life Saving Food, and the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage. So I'm going to tackle a topic here that, well, let's just say this is not the easiest one that I've taken on. And I'm a little bit hesitant in the sense that I don't want people to misunderstand what I'm saying and make it sound like, well, gee, I'm just telling you what we need to be is as antisocial as possible. But I'm going to suggest that as the world spins out of control in many areas, it's a very necessary thing to evaluate the relationships around you and choose your team wisely. It's essential. You've got to do it. But how you do that for some folks is going to be a little bit different because we hang on to what I guess we could call unproductive or sometimes even destructive relationships. There's a great article from The Good Citizen on how to build your wolf pack. It's called The Strength of the Wolf, Reevaluating Relationships in Our Post-Plandemic World. This is some very straight talk, and I'm going to warn you right now. The chances of it making you uncomfortable are extremely high. Nonetheless, I think it's worth sharing. Before I share it, I want to confess that, looking over relationships, establishing boundaries, and especially deciding, is this, a relationship, a friendship that's worth continuing, or is this, just kind of a casual, yeah, we like each other's stuff on Facebook or whatever. This is really a necessary thing, even if it is uncomfortable. Culling unproductive relationships in your life and moving on is a really tough thing. It's not just tough for, middle school age girls. It's really tough for everybody, but it's also a necessary part of life. So with that in mind, The Good Citizen starts with a quote from Rudyard Kipling from The Law for the Wolves. Now, this is the law of the jungle, as old and as true as the sky. And the wolf that shall keep it may prosper, but the wolf that shall break it must die. As the creeper that girdles the tree trunk, the law runneth forward and back. For the strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack. Now the good citizen writes, the world is changing fast. Most people can't keep up. How many friends do you see that have kept up? And this is a great way to look at it. How many friends do you see who, if you sat down and talked about the past 2 years, could say without hesitation, it was all a complete scam engineered to give more power to governments and to test how obedient and subservient populations would be? How many friends would call it a depopulation event, a dress rehearsal for what Bill Gates publicly calls the next one? Now, he says the next one will be far worse, and he would know. How many friends wouldn't soil themselves if, out of the blue, you said at a dinner party, you know, Jim and Sally, don't you find it astonishing that Gates and Dizak and Fauci still aren't swinging from piano wire at the Jefferson Memorial? Yeah, I'll go check on the Beyond Brisket. The point here is, there are friends and then there are passing friends. For nomads and expatriates, a trail of both is left behind in each city passed through over the decades. And it's easy to make them by joining some sports club or showing up regularly to pub trivia or poker rooms, though most of the younger generations simply prefer to swipe right. Once moving on to the next city, few nomad friends stay in touch. Now, there are friends who are besties or BFFs who by middle school are a passing, hey, and those BFFs in middle school become the same by high school, and so on until there's just a handful that survives the torrid changes from a decade of adolescence and young adulthood. There are friends who belong in the wolf pack, and there are friends who still send Christmas cards to show how great they're doing in their silly knitted sweaters once a year, but offer little else. Now, the good citizen says wolf packs are real friends in the true meaning of the word. The ones who will be there at 4 a.m. at a moment's notice if the crud hits the fan. Anyone who wants to navigate the minefields of Agenda 30 should be part of a wolf pack in a community that will rally together when things get challenging and provide the support systems needed for survival. Now, this shouldn't be considered doomsday prophesizing advice any longer. If you've been paying attention, you'll know this is just common sense now. 5 fathoms below the wolf pack are the friends that most of us still consider, though we shouldn't for much longer. These are acquaintances and those Facebook friends, and neither holds much real-world value beyond occasional digital performing and applauding, and that will have no purpose at all soon beyond last-ditch efforts to network or crowdsource problem-solving that can't be resolved inside one's community, like finding a specific baby formula. Only those who aren't prepared would need the help of long-lost acquaintances on digital networks to locate something important for the survival of their children. Now, the good citizen says our conceptions of friendship have changed significantly in recent decades. Relations grew distant for the most part. What once required a meeting at a restaurant or a cafe could be dealt with in a fraction of the time with a few clicks of a mouse or touches of a screen. Performative actions on social media became acceptable interactions for most people, with the occasional WhatsApp, SMS, or DM and a promise to get together soon. There was no need to get truly honest feedback on our personal lives in face-to-face interactions that don't lie, when a few dozen likes and comments, amazing, were enough satiating reinforcement. These censorious networks are simply a series of time-wasting, self-aggrandizing pursuits for ego inflation and neurotransmitter release. By the way, that one stung, because I have found myself being a dopamine seeker on more than one occasion, you know, checking my Twitter feed, checking Facebook. Oof. They have no future, says the good citizen, they have no future value as systems of herding behavior and mass surveillance, not for individuals who value liberty and autonomy. The good citizen writes, for many people, friendships were always a market-based bargain on the returns they would get for their time, attention, and investment in the other person, even subconsciously. And what was no longer satisfying in exclusivity could be recovered in more significant numbers of friends and larger quantities of shallow and dishonest digital feedback. Those once-upon-a-time friends that were revisited every few years in high school yearbooks reappeared magically in the late aughts in the form of friend request alerts on Facebook. And they more or less lingered and surveilled for a decade until recent years, when the most politically astute began to disappear. Now, when pack meets with pack in the jungle, and neither will go from the trail. Lie down till the leaders have spoken. It may be fair words shall prevail. How many Facebook friends do you still see around who would be appalled at the suspension of basic civil liberties for a virus with a 99.6% survival rate? For the international government, for the intentional, rather, government-incentivized murder of nearly a million Americans through the Fauci protocols of remdesivir and ventilators, while intentionally subverting early treatment, or effective early treatment. How many would know about Tower 7 or know that the Spanish flu was really bacterial pneumonia caused by Rockefeller's mass vaccination campaign? Or that FDR allowed the attack on Pearl Harbor or Tim McVeigh didn't bring down the federal building in Oklahoma City alone? We'll come back to this article here in just a few moments, but that discomfort you're feeling, it's actually a good thing. Stay with us.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. I'm sharing one of the more thought-provoking essays I've encountered this week. It's from the Good Citizen Substack. If there's one to subscribe to, this would probably be a good one. I'll tell you, the Good Citizen, whoever it is who writes under that pen name, has a great knack for putting things into perspective. And this was a topic that addressed something that I've noticed, but I've also been kind of uncomfortable with, and that is, how do you sort, how do you prioritize relationships in your life? And you know, this is not to say that you need to be antisocial by any means. It's just going into very tough times, and I think we are right there on the threshold of very tough times. For many of us, this is going to be for the first time in our lives. The relationships around us are more important than ever. Meaning, you can't hang on to unproductive or even dangerous relationships. It's if you want to know who your true friends are, you got to be concerned with, you know, who is your wolf pack. And if you're thinking, well, does that mean we're supposed to be predatory? Not necessarily. It just means that we find strength in the right kinds of friends, and the wrong kinds of friends can actually lead us astray or blunt our ability to move forward in life in a productive direction. So with that in mind, let's jump back into the commentary here. The Good Citizen asks, how many of your friends would be shocked to learn that FDR allowed the attack on Pearl Harbor, or that Tim McVeigh didn't bring down the federal building in Oklahoma City alone, or for that matter, that the U.S. government attacked its own citizens with anthrax? Any of those profiles who would be tuned in or red-pilled were all likely banned from the digital platforms a long time ago. Even a little truth amongst once upon a time friends is too much for the information gatekeepers. So the more relevant question regarding that platform is, why the hell would anyone still be on Facebook? As with those once upon a time friends who digitally showed up in feeds only to be culled from the platforms for not echoing the mindless Borg, there are those once-a-month leisurely country club friendships that won't have much to offer in the world that we're racing toward. Okay, this is where the rubber starts to meet the road here. The world's getting harsh by design, and only the tough and sharp survive harsh worlds. You can't sharpen a knife against that soft, leisurely country club life of luxury on demand and excess a la carte. Luxuries and leisure will need to be reconsidered for pragmatism and preparation, in service of the only relevant question for those concerned with weathering the political and economic engineered storms. What hardships are they planning next? Just as an aside here, I'll give you an example. You've heard talk about pending food shortages. We're going to talk a little bit about that later in the show. You've heard talk about baby formula shortages. How about this? I'm starting to see a talk of $6 per gallon gasoline by August. You know, the cost of fuel affects the cost of everything. And again, my goal here isn't to scare you. It's to take a good hard look at some real facts and some real possibilities that would be best dealt with, you know, as calmly and as decisively as we can. But refusal to face facts are not going to help us. All right, back to the commentary. High food prices, energy inflation, currency inflation, economic stagnation, fake meat, bug platter TV dinners, and the tiny home revolution, among 100 other things like surveillance apps and central bank-controlled digital currencies and QR code passports. They're herding people toward the world they want based on their completely misguided belief in overpopulation and limited resources. They, I assume, is referring to the Davos crowd. The agenda is clearly depopulation and forcing people to live with little to nothing. The good citizen says to get there, they need to engineer behavioral and consumer changes, and none of it involves choice or liberty or any of the values even moderately free people valued through history. The best time for preparing to meet the hardships they're creating was over the last decade. The next best time was yesterday, and the third best time is right now. Now, that includes sorting through black books and making difficult decisions about friendships and relationships. It's not just the people we keep close who will matter, but the communities that surround us that we actively choose to join. And again, from Rudyard Kipling, "When ye fight with a wolf of the pack, ye must fight with him alone and afar, lest others take part in the quarrel and the pack is diminished by war." The good citizen says the optimal location, stateside, will be a state with low compliance for the medical theater of the past 2 years and a low tolerance threshold hold for all the engineered madness. Florida, Arizona, Texas, Wyoming, and South Dakota come to mind first, although there are a half dozen others. Governors and local representatives who are not affiliated with global technocratic organizations like the World Economic Forum will be essential. Those who believe in the Constitution and the rule of law may provide shelter from the coming storms. The most important tier will be at the county level. Mayors and sheriffs with strong noses for social engineering BS and a social threshold for federal bureaucratic meddling will provide a nearby bulwark to the insanity. Find that local sheriff who didn't enforce mask mandates, who didn't dole out fines or force his or her deputies to get the clot shots. Find that community that will re-elect them or someone like them. The best locations will be mostly rural, with people distributed across an area with many homesteaders and small farmers. They should be fearless, powerful, armed, resourceful, gritty, and willing to die to keep their family and communities free. These are the people who will form the most effective wolf packs. All the rest who occupy some place in our lives outside our immediate families and the wolf pack, are just chaff. Now, those friendships that have survived and thrived over the decades, they're the most difficult to let go of. And no matter how hard it can be, those two need to be reevaluated. Distance, time, echo chambers, mass psychosis, it's possible they've slipped away down a different destiny, and there's no way to recover them. Take their temperature, gauge their socio-political situational acuity, and make the hard choices if needed. The matrix may have them now, and the grip is tight. It's almost impossible to break. When the government starts leaning on citizen informers, these people will not be your friends. Survival requires looking after ourselves and our own and letting go of weaker links. In the past, there were moments in life when we had a choice to make regarding a relationship with another person. We invested a lot of time and emotion in evaluating relations. In that instant of breakups, things could turn from uncertainty to elation or elation to pain and hurt, and possibly a lifetime of regret. Well, that was then. Times have changed. There's no time for emotional attachment, sentimentality, or regret. There's no point in regretting the loss of friendships that are no longer worth managing. It's a time for pragmatism and survival, for cool detachment. It's time to cull the sheep from our lives, the extra baggage that isn't worth the effort and upkeep, or having to pretend to be a dupe like them when they're around. There's no time for indulging their petty gossip, managed narratives and fables, and inconsequential frivolities. The good citizen says, despite our noble efforts, some people can't shapeshift from sheep to wolves, and so we must let the matrix eat them. If it's sheep you want in your life, you can always go to an animal auction and buy some, and at least they produce something useful for your new world. What's needed now to survive the fourth burning and the flying jabs of global management's technocratic dystopic agenda is a solid wolf pack. If at least to howl together that beautiful, wild, and free howl that says to these meddling psychopaths, "We will not comply. Come and make us." The strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack, and a wolf pack is no place for sheep. Now, I don't know if that strikes you like it does me, but I read that essay yesterday, and I have found myself coming back to it over and over again and realizing there's enough truth there that it makes me uncomfortable too, but I still think it's true. And I'm not saying this is the time now to start to, you know, whipping out your directory of friends and family and start to, okay, drawing a line through that one and that one. I'm not going to talk to these people anymore. I'm just saying that if you are serious about weathering the coming storms, you got to choose very carefully the people with whom you are going to most closely associate. And most importantly, you got to be the kind of person that people would want to associate with as well.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
And we are back. I want to give a shout out here to sewingandquiltingcenter.com. You can actually click on the link I provide in my show notes at thebrianhydeshow.com. Better still, if you live in southern Utah, particularly in the St. George area, you should really stop in and see this amazing business. This is a family-owned business, has been since it was started back in 1984, and it has changed hands, I think, three times. Teresa and Eric Alsop are the current owners, but the original founder of the business still works there, still services the sewing machines and other machines that people buy. I don't know if you're aware of this. I've learned a lot through my association with them, and Teresa actually was a guest on the show here just a short time ago. But sewing is a really, really serious pursuit, meaning people are willing to spend upwards of, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 to get the right machine for the job. Long arm quilting and sergers and embroidery machines. Now, you can also start with a, you know, entry-level sewing machine for under $200. But the key is, are you buying it from someplace that can service what they sell and that will train you, like will give you free classes to learn how to use that machine to its fullest? Because Sewing and Quilting Center will. Sewingandquiltingcenter.com. Hope you'll check them out. Better still, I hope you'll do business with them. Well, maybe this is a little too close to Hollywood or political gossip, something I really try to stay away from, but the Elon Musk and Twitter saga has been very revealing. And I've got a great article here from Andrea Widberg. This is from AmericanThinker.com. The 1-2 of Elon Musk and Project Veritas might just end Twitter. She says, it turns out that Elon Musk had a good reason to put the Twitter deal on hold, because it's possible that Twitter management may have misrepresented the number of actual accounts it has versus fake or spam accounts. And in another blow to the now beleaguered social media company, Project Veritas just put out another undercover video on Tuesday, this one of an ad executive mocking Musk for supporting free speech and having Asperger's, along with freely admitting that Twitter doesn't make any money. Between one and the other, it's entirely possible Twitter will soon collapse from its own weight. Now, it was a bit of a mystery just a few days ago when Elon Musk had put the Twitter deal on hold. And it turns out he's essentially accusing Twitter of having lied on its SEC filings about fake spam accounts. And now, of having refused to show him proof justifying the information in the SEC filings. What Musk tweeted a few days ago was 20% fake or spam accounts, while four times higher than what Twitter claims, could be much higher. So he says, my offer was based on Twitter's SEC filings being accurate. Yesterday, Twitter's CEO publicly refused to show proof of less than 5%, and he says this deal cannot move forward until he does. Now, Andrea Widberg says, although Musk tweets this information out rather casually, it's actually stunning because putting fraudulent information in an SEC filing can result in huge fines and even prison sentences for the executives involved. And additionally, if the advertisers were buying ads for a fixed price based upon their belief about the potential number of eyes on the ads, they could have a fraud action against the company. So what should be making Twitter even more nervous is that now that Musk has put the idea out there, others are noticing anomalies suggesting that a lot of Twitter is fake. Here are a couple of tweets from Pranay Pathol. Twitter claims less than 5% of their users are fake, spam, or bots. It seems that that number is at least 4 to 5 times more. The lowest estimate is roughly 20% of their users are fake or spam accounts. And he asks, Elon, what do you think could be the highest estimate as to how many accounts are present? How many fake accounts, rather, are present? 50%? Considering that this tweet is the most liked tweet that your tweet, the one about I'm buying Coca-Cola to put cocaine back in. This was a tweet that Musk did after he made the offer for Twitter. Joking, of course. He says, considering that this tweet is the most liked tweet of all time, which is only liked or interacted with rather by 2 to 2.5% of the entire Twitter user base, there's a very high possibility the number of fake spam bot accounts could be well over 50%. To which Elon Musk replied, exactly. Now, Andrea Widberg says, additionally, a new audit has revealed that half of the followers that Joe Biden's Twitter account shows are fake. Oh, no, I know. You're surprised as I am. After all, you know, he so clearly won the 2020 election. And was, I mean, you saw how packed his political rallies were during the campaign. You saw how popular he is. I mean, it's not a surprise, right? All right, sarcasm off. Andrew Widberg says, this is no surprise to those of us who understand. Joe ran a fake campaign. The election was faked. Biden is a great pretender, or more accurately, a lousy pretender, falsely occupying the White House. She says, I'm surprised that only half his followers are fake. Then, to make Twitter's Tuesday even more miserable, Project Veritas released a video of Alex Martinez, a Twitter lead client partner, in other words, an advertising executive, saying Twitter is opposed to free speech, that the company makes no profit, and that Elon Musk is special, but not in a good way, because he has Asperger's. That's one of the things that's always true, is when you scratch an ardent out there leftist, you find someone unkind. Martinez, whose favorite word is like, which he sprinkles liberally in both sentences, had some fascinating statements to make. People need to be told what to think. He says, people don't know how to make a rational decision if you don't put out correct things that are supposed to be out in the public, right? Also, Twitter cares about the planet, not free speech. Martinez says, the rest of us who've been here believe in something that's good for the planet and not to give people free speech. Martinez also believes Musk is crazy. He has Asperger's, so he's special. We all know that. And that's fine. Well, so here, no wonder he's going to say some effing crazy S because he's special. This one is stunning, though. Martinez says Twitter doesn't make any money, although he later adds that the CEO and board make a lot of money. What he said was, right now we don't make profit, so I'm going to say ideology, which is what led us into not being profitable. But the most priceless moment in the video comes near the end when Martinez congratulates himself for not having been caught in a Project Veritas sting. Now, at this point, Andrew Widberg says, I'm not sure it matters anymore whether Musk buys Twitter or not. It's been exposed as a pretty vile institution, one that is communist in outlook. He also talks about that. Martinez says, you know, that the staff, the upper staff at Twitter are communist as F word, his words. But you think about it, yeah, they are pretty communist in their outlook. They hate free speech. Twitter mocks people who have medical conditions, and or at least, again, this representative of Twitter mocks people with medical conditions and may have possibly committed massive fraud against the SEC, Musk, and its advertisers. So it may be a case of dead company walking. And yes, the video showing this Twitter executive, you know, calling Elon Musk mentally handicapped and saying that Twitter's not here to give people free speech. You can watch it. It's linked within the article, which is linked in my show notes at thebrianhydeshow.com. Now, my goal here isn't to, you know, just get you all ginned up and angry at Twitter, but just to understand the truth is getting out. The truth is starting to seep through despite the best efforts to keep us distracted, to, you know, to fact check and to use sophistry to keep us from recognizing things that are bad. Caitlin Johnstone put it this way. You know, the fact checkers are out there not to stop misinformation. Their job is to prevent us from recognizing actual information about what the ruling class is doing to us. They do a fairly good job of it, but you know what? A lot of people still are beginning to catch on and wake up. I know you're one of them, or you wouldn't be listening to this program. So the goal here isn't to, hey, now that you know this, let's all get together and let's go picket outside Twitter's headquarters and make our voices heard, or better still, let's throw trash at them as they walk down the street. No. I'm just saying that if you rely on Twitter as a source of how you see the world, or, you know, how you get a vantage point from which to view what's going on around you, just understand there's a great deal of manipulation. Understand that what information you find on there is pretty worked over before it gets to you. And maybe you'll discover something that, you know, I've recently recognized, and that is it feeds my need for dopamine. If I find myself checking, you know, my Twitter feed, oh, somebody retweeted something that I posted. Somebody liked, someone commented. There's a little reward center in your brain that goes, ah, this is great. I mean, look, I love accolades as much as the next person. Someone pays me a compliment, you bet, I'm going to beam. I might blush. But we got to be focused on more than just, hitting those little reward centers in our brain the right way, thanks to social media. Times we're living in right now require us to be people who are people who possess substance. And dopamine, great as it may feel, is not the stuff that life is built on. So maybe, just maybe consider not just Twitter, but any other social media that you're using. Is it really providing the benefit that you think, or are you just looking for your next, opportunity to feel good about yourself? And I say this as one who's recently recognized, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I've been doing. I know, it's a painful realization.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Welcome back to the show. Quick shout out here to the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage, located in St. George, Utah. Now, actually, if you are catching this message anywhere within the state of Utah or the state of Idaho, particularly if you are in the market for a home and need to get a mortgage, I want you to give Heather a call. You can do so at 435-703-4522. You can stop by her office and you're in Southern Utah. If you're in Southern Utah, go to 619 South Bluff Street in St. George. You can check her out. Talk to Heather and her team at Patriot Home Mortgage, because they are the ones who bring the experience, the stability, and the clout to get you the loan you need without delay. Time is of the essence, especially when it comes to getting that loan. Talk to Heather Turner and her team at Patriot Home Mortgage. Her NMLS ID is 715386, and Patriot Home Mortgage is an equal housing opportunity lender. Well, you want a little bit of good news? Can I give you just a quick update here? Remember the Ministry of Truth? I'm sorry, the new Disinformation Governance Board? I don't know if you caught the news yesterday, but Nina Jankowicz, who was appointed to head up this particular part of the Department of Homeland Security, the Disinformation Governance Board, has resigned amid major pushback from conservatives who compared the board to an Orwellian Ministry of Truth. According to the Washington Post, working groups within the DHS focusing on mis, dis, and malinformation have been suspended. Now, the board was reportedly shut down on Monday. Jankowicz submitted her resignation letter in response to the board's dissolution on Tuesday morning. However, Department of Homeland Security officials reportedly had an urgent call with her on Tuesday night and gave her the option of staying on board even if her work was put on hold due to the backlash. Taylor Lorenz, a reporter who's somewhat of an expert and crybully on bullying, says the board could still be shut down pending a review from the Homeland Security Advisory Council. So there are a couple things we can take from this, and I'm just going to give just the kind of quick down and dirty. Number one, ridicule is an effective tool against tyranny. And I'm grateful that this thing was, how can I put this nicely, strangled in its crib while it was still in its infancy. But the second lesson that we need to take away from this is there is very clearly an effort going on within various bureaucracies of our federal government and elsewhere to test us and to push us and to just see how much are we willing to put up with. What's our tolerance threshold? And it turns out that quite a number of people, myself included, and most likely you, were not really willing to embrace the idea of, oh, good, finally, a disinformation governance board to protect us from misinformation. Again, it's not misinformation they're trying to protect us from. They're trying to prevent us from hearing information that would give us a clue to what our putative leaders are really up to and what they intend to inflict on us. So on the one hand, I'm happy to see this thing shut down. On the other hand, I don't buy into the narrative that, well, it's because, what's his name, Jack Posobiec, who, by the way, is a brilliant poster on Twitter. Very prolific, but he's also very effective. He's the one they blame.
Well, he's the one who started this right-wing campaign that somehow, you know, targeted Jankiewicz, and you know, she had to quit because she was being cyber-bullied. Boo-hoo.
Yeah. With the weight of the federal government and the Department of Homeland Security behind her, she was just being picked on, and it was just so unfair. As opposed to, the American citizenry was in danger of having more of its speech parsed and managed and controlled by an already out-of-control government. So, good riddance. It may be paused, but I think we can safely, you know, call the time of death Tuesday morning, 11 a.m. Let's go bury this thing behind the barn and move on. And don't forget the power of awareness combined with memes to create a groundswell of opposition to another badly hatched government idea. All right, I'm going to shift gears here. Now I'm going to ask you a tough question, and think before you answer this. Do you still believe that our government is working to represent you and your interests? Got a great article here from J.B. Shirk on how Americans and their government have become divided by a common language. So here's an example. American voters say, we're concerned about the prices of milk, eggs, baby formula, and gas. The U.S. government responds, so you're saying we should spend tens of billions more on a proxy war against Russia and ban oil and natural gas drilling here at home? American voters respond, no. Listen, inflation is making it impossible to afford groceries. Our businesses are dying. To which the U.S. government responds, you want us to talk more about transgenderism and legacies of slavery? Maybe throw in some free sexual grooming advice for your children? The American voters say, pay attention. We'll talk slowly for the remedial learners in Congress. In every way possible, America is headed in the wrong direction right now. To which the U.S. government responds, you think we need more illegal immigration right now? If that's fine, we can do that. No problem. Now, J.B. Shirk says, Irish playwright George Bernard Shaw humorously remarked that Britain and America are two nations divided by a common language. Now, the same could be said about American citizens and their public servants. There's what Americans want, and there's what those in power give them. So much for representative government, eh? Oh, pshaw, some will say. We still have representative government. We're just no longer the ones it represents. If the security fencing surrounding much of D.C. weren't a dead giveaway, the Leviathan's merciless efforts to target half the country as terrorists and insurrectionists have drilled the point home. Americans, you will behave or you will lose your First Amendment privileges for good. And if you persist in your mischief, we will be forced to bump up gas prices and starve even more of your children. So from the swamp's point of view, greed and power are the only constituents worth representing. Citizens, in contrast, are just a bureaucratic hassle to be managed. Now, that doesn't sound like a government of the people, by the people, for the people, does it? Sounds more like a government setting itself above those it governs, using force and coercion to bend its subjects to its will. Well, if that's how democracy is now defined, J.B. Shirk says it's little surprise that the New World Order crowd sings its praises. I say, good sir, don't those heavy-handed executive mandates reek of despotism?
Impossible! This is democracy!
Well, no wonder the Chinese Communist Party has the gall to praise a rigged Hong Kong election in which its hand-picked candidate receives nearly 100% of the vote as a victory for democracy. The D word has become the quintessential get-out-of-jail-free card for all the world's tyrants. When Nancy Pelosi and Xi Jinping both feign allegiance to democracy while threatening anyone who might weaken their power, well, then the word has lost all meaning. Of course, an epidemic of words losing their meaning is now more contagious than the Chinese flu. When men are women, babies aren't human, constitutional rights are ephemeral, equality requires treating all social groups differently, freedom is selfish, free speech is dangerous, and fighting racism demands elevating race over everything else, then truth becomes nothing more than what those with power declare it to be. Because truth is the first casualty in any war, an important question arises. Shouldn't this explosion of government-sponsored falsehoods also force us to consider whether we are, in fact, under attack? Shouldn't the American government's commitment to manipulate meaning and control acceptable information be seen as the opening salvos in a war against the people it also insists on controlling? Right now, America feels chaotic and unmoored. Yet this is how all wars begin. By first saturating the battlefields with waves of invasive propaganda meant to shape the thoughts and deeds of the combatants. Perhaps the confusion in America today rests entirely with most Americans' unwillingness to acknowledge that their government could possibly see them as the enemy. It doesn't matter how many times the FBI harasses parents at school board meetings or how egregiously unfair the Department of Justice's treatment of January 6th political protesters remains. The idea that the American government is attacking the American people is too much for some people to accept. If the madness afflicting America today feels a little like Alice in Wonderland dodging the Queen of Hearts, though it might just be because of the off with their head sounds a lot like official government policy. A pro-abortion, anti-family American ruling class, financially and ideologically aligned with a Davos death cult, obsessed with population control and climate apocalypse, can be no cheerleader for life, liberty, or happiness. Traditional notions of American individualism and self-determination have no home in a country whose government finds free will a threat to its legitimacy. Unalienable rights are anathema to any power structure too brittle to survive dissent. J.B. Shirk says, in other words, when the American government stops representing the American people and instead focuses exclusively on enriching itself, it stops speaking the common political language that has united the American people for 250 years and guided the United States through the bitter moments of its past to become stronger on the other side. When American citizens and the American government speak the same words yet disagree on their meaning, then neither those governing nor those governed can remain bound together for long. Dang, that's about as direct as it gets.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.